swords with handle art to spar trolls and charge tolls to cross roads where bandits are. Catacombs and giant doors protect the chest that stores legendary items with the dragon bones and iron.
It's a grand theft of Elder Scrolls, Simon's Quest with Toe and Earl, rocket shoes to Everclue, Easter eggs and gaming news. The POTUS need some bad dudes to crash a crew like Bandicoot. All shit a gaming and glitch control issues. Control issues.
Yes, y'all. Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
And this is A-Dub. You can find us at control-issues.com. You can also go to your podcast provider, whoever that may be. Look for Control Issues, download it, subscribe to it, rate it, review it. Head on over to Spotify. Look for Control Issues. You'll find your boys over there, and we hope to find you as well. What's the other thing? Twitch.tv/controlissuespod, where we put up gameplay videos for your viewing pleasure. And head on over to X. My Control Issues is the handle. Last but not least, controlissuespod@gmail.com. Drop us a line. Let us know you're fine. AMC, what's going on?
Not much. Hey, Doug, kids just stepped out. Had to go to Theo's going to his first classmate birthday party. He was in preschool, but nobody really had any birthdays at that point, or he didn't get invited, who knows. But kindergarten, now he's getting invited. So he had his first birthday. It's to these two twins, because people be taking hormones these days, so there's a lot more twins just walking around out in this world. Really? I don't know if you noticed, like, they're, you know, parents are getting older. And I didn't know this until, you know, we started, like, having kids. But a lot of people that we knew were saying that they had issues. And so they were taking, supplements, like whatever hormonal things to help it get going, even like doing the in vitro. And with those things, every now and then, it can lead to more twins being born, because you're basically trying to get as many eggs fertilized as possible. Hoping that, like, you know, a couple, like, one becomes viable, but you end up getting more, and so you'll end up with not identical twins, but like fraternal twins, things like that. And so, yeah, anyways, not saying that, actually I'm pretty sure this is the case, because they're an older couple that had a kid. So they're going, seeing these twins, having a birthday. It's gonna be a good time. Yeah, and so I got a little time to play Diablo, which was great. Mm-hmm. Other than that, TV show watching. Didn't really get much into that. Watched a little bit of Record of Ragnarok, but not enough. Still not done with the Jack the Ripper fight, because I've been heavily into wrestling. There was a big event, Bad Blood, recently with Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns. The Rock showed back up, so the final boss is now back on the scene. So they're going to be doing their big build to the next WrestleMania, but really it's the big build to Raw coming to Netflix. And so they're trying to get all the storylines lined up, so that right when they get to Netflix, like, everything is just going to be, like, right there for, in their mind, will hopefully be an entirely new audience of people that will be introduced to wrestling. So yeah, The Rock is now back. He's not gonna be doing matches really until probably I think the big event is War Games. So he'll just be making appearances and kind of setting the table for things to come, which is nice, because whenever The Rock shows up, it's just a huge crowd reaction. It gets there's more of a buzz around wrestling when he's around. He just still has that pull, even at this age. It's pretty amazing, just to see him still show up and be The Rock, but kind of, you know, make tweaks to his characters. And now he's like, he's still The Rock, but now he's the final boss Rock, because he's a little bit older, a little more grizzled, a veteran. But he still he can make moves now. He has more influence, so he's a bit of an authority figure in wrestling. So I'm really enjoying that. And then just started reading a new Warhammer book, not a new one, but just started reading a Warhammer book. just making my way through the Horus Heresy, which is good because I took a break from the game Space Marines, so at least I'm still in that Warhammer universe while I'm reading this book. But hey, Doug, that's enough about me. How have you been?
Not too bad, my good man. Just hanging in there, working that 9 to 5, keeping the bills paid, keeping the lights on. Last night, I went to see a movie with an old friend of mine. It was a spur of the moment thing. She just texted me and was like, "That My Hero movie's out. You want to go see it?" And I was like, "You goddamn right." And so we got together. It was like, I don't dislike going to the movies. Ever since I got this TV, I just like staying at home and watching things on the TV. It's just so much more vivid and has more detail. Plus, I'm in the comfort of my own living space. However, went to the movies. It's the first time I've seen like the big reclining seats and everything. So I was like, oh, okay, it's a little swanky.
Yeah, no, it's nice now, right? You could easily fall asleep in like a movie theater.
Oh, I was ready, but
Yeah.
yeah, like get sat in the big nice seats, put my feet up a little bit, and
Did you order
like,
food to have it
oh,
delivered?
no food. But
Yeah.
it's one thing to just be back in a movie theater, but it's another thing being there with someone who's also just geeking out on everything that we're seeing. Like we're like
Lady, the lady
between
friend.
the little quiet points or when stuff happens, we're just like, oh. Nah.
Yeah, that's great.
Just like what is going on? Oh, it was great. Especially like I hate to say it, but the theater was very empty. So it was kind of
It
like we
was
were
kind of
just
nice that you have it to yourself.
exactly. So that's
Yeah.
the drawback. But yeah, man, it was great. Watch the My Hero, You're Next. Oh man, it was very good. It doesn't spoil much of what's going on in season 7. I mean, you'll see some abilities that are like, wait a minute, when did that happen? And then you'll watch season 7, like, oh man. But other than that, it's not like story beats or characters like that. Like it's a whole new group of villains that I haven't seen before. And it's just watching the kids handle this business on the highest level I've ever seen them at is it's amazing. Like where the second movie, I think it was Heroes Rise, where they excelled with like the camera work and the animation. This movie excels, like it has a similar level of camera work and general composition with the characters and everything, but just I don't know, just you can see where they put the money and the focus on the project because like even the action choreography is so much more like impactful and well thought out and beautifully animated. The effects are out of control. It's a good time, man. I highly recommend it. And right when you think it's over, you get a little bit more. So it just keeps going. Like it felt very satisfying. You're following along, just wondering like when are they going to be able to take care of all this? And then it comes together. It's awesome. I highly recommend that. I need to catch up on Uzumaki. I think I watched the first episode and I'm a couple of episodes behind. Still working on JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. That remains solid. A very good time. And that's about that, man. Just, I broke out the air fryer. It's been on hiatus. It's been on hiatus for a minute, but I did some Trader Joe's shopping and, normally I get like the salads, I get some soups, some candy, some low sugar candy and stuff. But I noticed that they had these pre-cooked like sausages, like jalapeno sausages or chipotle, something or other, Trader Joe's sausages. So I was like, whatever, let's give this a shot. So I was like, you know what? The issue I have with the air fryer, maybe if I use it over here, it won't be an issue. And sure enough, it wasn't an issue. So now the air fryer is back in my rotation. I now have another like prep at home meal that I can make for myself. So if I don't feel like doing all the dishes and making eggs, I can just pop out the air fryer, salt and pepper a salad up, and there you go. Got a meal, protein, healthy, not a lot of carbs and all that. So Yeah, man, just slowly bringing things back. And sure enough, like after two or three days of that, you know, starting to get a little tighter on the waist, I'm like, oh, okay, this is what happens when you eat better and take better care of yourself and watch your calories and stuff. So I'm looking forward to not ordering out as much as I've been. This is definitely going to keep me from ordering so much DoorDash all the time. So save a little money, get a little healthier, just all working toward that end goal of being the best version of myself.
Well, I know something that took up a lot of your time, a lot of my time when I was able to game. Let's just get right into it. What have you been gaming on this week, Ada?
Well, and I was killing time. I think last week we talked about it, how I was killing time with Starfield, working on Andreja's relationship. Eventually, after the show, I ended up unlocking her loyalty mission, took care of that, had the big discussion at the end of it, told her how I feel about her. Now we're an item. And now we're going into Shattered Space. I went in there thinking a little too much of myself, and the enemies spawned in, took me down like it was no big deal. So I had to reassess my whole strategy, start using cover more, pop out, take a shot or two, get in the cover, because their shots hit like trucks. I think I'm like level 82 or something like that, and these enemies are giving me a run. Granted, I have the introvert trait. I also have the isolation perk, which I believe I don't get the benefit of because I have a companion. So some things that would normally help me if I was solo or either working against me or aren't helping me at all at this point. So I have to be a bit more strategic and defensive minded when I'm going through there and trying to make my way through stuff. So I'm still in the Oracle, like the first few corridors of the Oracle. I'm exploring zero G, moving around, just getting through the space, trying to figure out what's happening, collecting data logs and, you know, deciphering what's going on. So by the time I really got going in that, the big one dropped, AMC. Everything had to stop at that moment. Yes, Diablo 4, Vessel of Hatred, officially went live. Not at 4 p.m. like it was scheduled to. Apparently there were some last minute issues and they had to like delay it for a few hours. But eventually about like 9 p.m. the
why did I even pay for this?
Oh, there were so many people like, oh, I took the day off for this. Now I gotta go. I'm going to bed. And there were also posts with people like, oh, my wife's just looking at me on the couch wondering what I'm waiting for.
I'm not leaving.
Well, like some of those dudes, their thing was, if I tell her it's delayed, she's gonna try to make me do something.
Gotta make me be responsible.
She's gonna want to watch
like, TV. Like you already blocked off that amount of time, because I get that, like when you block off a certain amount of time the game, like that is your time, and then to know like I'm not getting my time. Like, fuck. I mean, it's never happened to me because I've never, you know, been like blocked off time on a day one. So I haven't been in that situation. But I get the sentiment when your time is precious because you got obligations to people who are important to you. And every now and then you get some time to play and you want to be able to utilize all that. But keep it going.
At the same token, I mean, you also have a very healthy relationship where you can take gaming time and it's not an issue.
Yeah, not being judged by my spouse. Because there's definitely, though, I have a cousin who was like that, like with her dude. He was like trying to play, I think, Uncharted or something. And she's like, you just like zone out when you're playing. It's like, yeah. It's like when I'm
playing. That is the goal.
Yeah. It's like if I'm enjoying something, I'm putting all my attention into it. But it's one thing if for some reason you need me because there's something important and I'm ignoring that important thing, but it's another thing when you just want me to stop what I'm doing, take my eyes off the screen to like acknowledge you. It's like, all right, I get that, but also like I'm in this. I'm in this right now. Respect what's happening.
Are you not seeing what's happening on the screen? Like, sit down, enjoy this with me.
Well, I have like I work out at home, and every now and then, like you know, I just be doing like some squats with the kettlebell, and then Marissa would just come up and start talking to me like mid ref. So I'm just like, I'm like paying attention, but I'm also like trying to keep count in my head, and I'm like, you know what's happening right now.
Seven,
Yeah,
seven,
yeah, 30. Like, ah, shit.
yes. Yes. Got here.
But Diablo, yeah.
Oh
It finally,
yeah.
yeah, 4 hours, people
Yeah. Oh yeah,
waiting.
the delays. So about like instead of 4 p.m., it was like 9 p.m. West Coast time. So I think
Yeah, so
that's
that's
like
like
a whole
midnight.
the
That's
whole
midnight on
next
East
day in the
Coast.
UK in
Yeah.
Auckland. But eventually it came online and AFC, it was sweet. I told you guys that I did the preparations. I deleted all my characters, deleted all my gear, went
Scorched
into
Earth.
Scorched Earth
It
approach.
deleted
Just, I
the
mean, I would have been tempted, dude, but if it
game
wasn't for those Lilith statues, I probably would.
file.
Nah, I would never do that. Like all the materials and money and stuff is fine. That's all in Eternal, but in the seasonal realm, which is also blank anyway, I just like in general having that clean slate and just starting from the bottom. But yeah, went in it, Spiritborn, I'm going with the Eagle skills because of all the classes I've played so far. I've not used any lightning spells other than with my druid, and that was kind of a mix of lightning and earth due to the Nature's Fury key passive, but you'll get there. You'll see what that's about. But yeah, man, got in there doing the campaign over and having been through it, seeing it retold all again. But now it's like I'm picking out all kinds of little details and foreshadowing, like, oh, that character was right there the whole time. Oh, they got that symbol right there. That's going to be important later. Like, oh, he's showing you this. And I was like, I see. They really thought this out. And like, I wanted to get through the campaign as swiftly as possible. So just on my mount, everywhere, nothing but main missions, like, unless it was in the general vicinity, or unless it was in the general vicinity and like ready to be completed, I pretty much ignored all the side content and everything. It's just like, let me get through this. Let me be as low level as possible when I get done with this. I ended up finishing like on level 40 something, like maybe I was close to 50. And then I had those 15 levels or so to go into Vessel of Hatred. And I gotta tell you, man, it went hard. Like, after I finished the campaign, I was ready for the credits, but instead it just rolled the Vessel of Hatred cutscene. And I was like, all right, it's all right, let's do this. So, yeah, did that, got to the new area, going through the mission, like pushing along at the same time, running up against like the hurdles and the roadblocks from dealing with the new mechanics of the system, namely the difficulty where, like, I want there to be a challenge. But sometimes it can be a little too challenging, and I like that because that's the kind of like wiggle room and negotiating that I've been looking for in this entry of Diablo. With them adding the torment levels and tying everything to the pit, it makes all the challenges and everything very uniform per each difficulty level. Like, I finished the game on hard because you have to, and then after I beat the campaign, put it up to penitent. Was doing good, hit a roadblock when I was doing Vessel of Hatred. So went out, did some stuff, messed around, unlocked Torment 1, bumped it up, started doing some more stuff, and just kept repeating that cycle. I'm on Torment 2 now. I'm very close to the end of Vessel of Hatred. Like, it's just I'm fighting against papier-mâché at this point in Torment 2, but I'm still not strong enough for Torment 3. But I'm loving the builds. Just it's way more deliberate, and like it I don't want to say segmented or partitioned, like there's a word that I just can't think of, but it's way more deliberate with what you have to do if you want to get certain things. Like, if you want to upgrade your weapons, you got to get crafting materials, and you can get those in the Infernal Hordes or the Nightmare Dungeons or the Undercity. And then if you want to go do the Infernal Hordes, then you got to go do like Nightmare Dungeons or some other activity or craft some. Can you craft those? But basically, it's all to say that everything needs something and you have to do something specific to get those materials to then do the thing, which will allow you to do more stuff. So it's like there's steps that you have to go through to make things happen rather than just running up to any old thing and like, oh, I'm going to engage with this now. I'm going to engage with this now. Instead, it's like, okay, I'm going to do these for a bit. And then that'll let me do a few of these. And then that'll let me upgrade this. And that'll let me turn the difficulty up. And then I can start getting the better loot. And then I can, you know, it's a lot of, and then as you're moving and thinking about all the little short-term goals that you're accomplishing. So it's, that has given a real robust feel to the game, as well as with the difficulties being tied to the pit, no more monster levels. So that's giving you a continually escalating challenge every time you move up the difficulty levels, rather than, you know, we were talking in the pre-show and I think you summed it up pretty well, where you're like, you get to world tier 4 pretty fast and then you're just there, and then there's just a handful of activities that offer you that greater challenge where eventually you end up just doing like one or two that give you the highest, whereas now like everything's stepping up over the course of up in the difficulty. So it's like less of the content is losing its relevance as you're leveling up and getting more powerful, which makes it a more full and just more like thought out experience rather than what it was before. So yeah, 2.0, Vessel of Hatred, Season 6, all successful moves with this game. I'm having an absolute blast. I've been playing it nonstop. When I'm not playing it, I'm thinking about what I can do, how I can do it. I'm approaching my loot differently. I'm understanding how your needs for aspects and affixes change depending, like the higher you go and the more powerful you become, you just start to notice things that don't work for you or that you don't need anymore. And then you swap in new things that do work for you and that you do need that then give you more power, and you can just slaughter everything. So I'm doing pretty good. I'm on the last chapter of the season journey, and I can do the things on there. I'm just getting myself in a position to do them comfortably. I finished out the battle pass this morning. I'm at like Paragon level 160, so I have 140 levels to go. Those slow down around level 100, so definitely going to have just those incremental little bumps in power as I move from regular nodes to magic nodes to rare nodes to the legendaries to the glyphs. And then I'm still upgrading my glyphs. Got to get those legendaries on there. I'm messing around with rune words and upgrading those. And just everything can be implemented, upgraded, just added to your build to give you more power, more functions. You can just take on higher and higher challenges, getting all the most epic loot that you can imagine. It's an absolute blast. I'm looking forward to running through this process with every single class. Looking forward to finishing Vessel of Hatred and unlocking just the dynamic and static activities that are going to be in that region. And yeah, man, it's an absolute blast. Together with Starfield, like Diablo and Starfield so far are my games of the generation. I've put the most hours into them. I intend to put an order of magnitude more hours into both of them. They just keep expanding and improving, giving me exactly the kind of experiences I've wanted out of this generation of gaming. But enough about me. AMC, what have you been playing?
Hey, Dub, pretty much the same thing. I will say I played Spiritfarer, girlfriend game with Marissa, the one that we followed up to. It was a follow-up to Dave the Diver. We need another game to play. Yeah, that game is just awesome. We did what felt like was a boss battle, what we'll say is, because there, so yeah, like a big dragon showed up on the world map. We took the boat to the dragon. We get there, and one of the spirits that we have on our boat ends up interacting with it, and as they're talking to like the dragon, you actually learn about the side character, the spirit that's on your boat. You get a little bit of their backstory, but then it turns into a boss battle, but it's not really a boss battle in a sense. Like you end up just jumping along its back while it's moving, and then there would be a gem mound on his back, and you just break it up with your axe and you get like the resources. You do it enough times
Oh, wow.
and then you attack his head and then he goes down. So I guess there is an attack. You attack his head at the end and he goes down. But mainly it just seems like it was in service of learning about the spirit that's on your boat and then getting those resources off of his back. There was another boss that we came across in the world, ended up being a turtle, but there was no boss battle there. It's like you end up just like putting resources on his back. He does a dive, and I guess when he comes back, it produces more of that resource that you need. So they're just as you get more characters, the game seems to open up. And at this point, we have about three spirits on our boat. Some are related to the main character, not all. They all seem to have some relation to your character, but you don't fully understand what the story is with the protagonist in the game because one, silent protagonist, two, young character. So it's like they're young, but yet they have a lot of history with all these people. So it seems like they're reincarnated, or something of that sense, to then take on for Charon to be the spirit farer. But yeah, we're enjoying like all the entire gameplay loop of traveling from place to place on the boat. While you're traveling, you're collecting resources, you're cooking, you're gardening. Then as you get resources, like we built like a sawmill, we had to cut up the wood to get wood planks. And what's great is like each resource that we end up creating, there's like a mini game within it. So like with the sawmill, you have to cut it to a certain point, or no, you have to cut it perfectly along the line of like the wood log. And if you do that, then you get more wood planks. If not, then you get less and like some sawdust. And those become resources. Same thing with like yarn. You do this whole like yarning, like this whole loom thing, and it's like a loom mini game. And as like you're doing it, you're trying to hit a certain point, and that produces a certain amount of thread that you can then use that to upgrade the housing and stuff like that. But so it's a really fun game as far as like a life sim, but not the typical you're just on a farm life sim, like or in a neighborhood life sim. Like you're on a boat. Which is fun. It's a different take on it. But yeah, the big game that I was playing, the game that you were playing, the game that everybody should be playing, that being Diablo 4, Vessel of Hatred. Yeah, I didn't get to play it opening day. I got to play it the next day because I took Wednesday off from work, had some time off, so it was great. Got to jump right in the following day. And leading up to the game, I was all gung-ho on the Spiritborn. But then when one of the things I did while leading up was I kind of finally jumped into the Druid and tried it out pre-Vessel of Hatred. And I really enjoyed playing with the Werewolf, but I wanted to stop just because I knew that all my progress was kind of going to be pointless because I really wanted to see after they, made all the changes with the expansion, how the new Druid, like Werewolf class would look. So I held off playing the game, jumped in after the release of Vessel of Hatred. Jumped right. I ended up going with Druid over the Spiritborn. Started off with Werewolf, pushing forward early on in the game. Went right to the Spiritborn. What is it? The Vessel of Hatred content. So I went straight there, pushed through, got my first mercenary with the Werewolf. Was enjoying the attack speed and the agility, but a part of me was like, oh yeah, I still have not tried the Werebear. So I took a second, respec'd all my skills over towards Werebear and tried it out, took it out for a spin, and immediately just fell in love with the class. Like playing as Necromancer, it was a lot of me sitting back and controlling the battlefield with like curses, sending out my what is it, the bile pools and things like that. Oh, the blight pools, slowing down enemies in that way. And then the minions would then go and tear them up as I'm getting in my attacks to build up the mana and then kind of rinse and repeat, get the ultimates going so I can send out the army of minions that they just run and explode at people. And so yeah, the whole point was like I was sitting on the outside and controlling the battlefield. And then from going from that to then now playing as the Werebear, where I am the focal point of the action, just right in the middle of it. And I'm just tearing up everything. Like
Mm-hmm.
What's great is he's not the fastest, but he has abilities that can charge towards, he has ability that can charge towards enemies. And so there's a way to like keep yourself in the action when they try to escape you, because you just start messing people up and they want to get away from you because you're the werebear. And it's great. He has certain abilities that add a little bit of flair to his action. One of his attack is one of his big attacks is pulverize, and it's he kind of slams the ground. And I think it's pulverize that does this. One of the side effects of it is that it can knock down the enemy, and so you'll hit the attack, knock them down. They're on the ground for about like 3 seconds. Then you just start ground and pounding them with the bear. So you feel like it takes me to, I don't know if you watch that movie, The Revenant, but when the bear
Yes.
just eats up Leonardo DiCaprio's back out in that wilderness. Like that's how I feel in the action. Like it's just me letting loose and going ham on everything and anything that gets near me. On top of that, he's built to be like a tank, and so there's a lot of durability, fortify built into his attacks. So you just feel like unstoppable, like taking me back to playing, what is it, the Crusader in Diablo 3, just having that class that you just handle all the action that you throw at him. Like that's how I feel as the bear. And so yeah, it was just great. I absolutely love the werebear. Got my two side homie wolves running with me. And then I also had the mercenary, the first dude with the I believe he has one arm after you go through like the initial part of his story. But played with
Yeah,
him
they
for a
did
little
him
bit.
a dirty.
But he ends up joining the crew, which is awesome. And that's the one thing I like is that they have you have to play through like a story mission with each mercenary to then make them available. And so they're not just they're not just hired guns in a sense, like they're actually characters with backstories by the time you get them as an option to roll with you. And so I did two other mercenaries. There was like this cannibal woman who's on a path of revenge, and then there's this I mean they're all kind of on a path of revenge, and then there's this archer dude who's like a bit of a rogue. He's the man. And so I immediately was like, oh, I'm switching to him because I like one, I like his archer abilities, but two, he has a he sets traps. And so I really liked his one of his abilities is he throws like a bomb and it stuns enemies. And so since I've given up that crowd control with the necromancer to be the werebear, it's nice to have another side character out there that's just stunning people to then so I can just get to them and fuck them up. So yeah, there's a good synergy to him with my build to have somebody on the outside as I'm just in the middle of the action, as opposed to that first guy, he was like another tank. So I felt like it was a little redundant. So yeah, I got my mercenary, really enjoying that. They have the classes now for the mercenaries. And what's cool about that is it does make them feel like unique characters, not just from a backstory perspective, but also from a build, because there's two branching paths, and within those paths, there's branching paths. And so you can really customize your mercenary to a play style that is very that helps, that enhances your play style in a way, or your build even. And so yeah, it's cool rolling with them. I like it just because one, I like playing with the homies, but A Dub's ahead of me right now, so I got a side AI homie to play with, and when I join up with other people, link up, he goes away, and so it's a good way of having like a co-op companion with me out there. And yeah, I like the idea of basically they build experience. It's through rapport, and that's really just completing missions, then builds his rapport with you, and then as their rapport builds up, you hit different levels, and at different levels, you get more skill points that you then pump into his skill tree. So that's a good like passive way to then just get more and more experience gains within the game. So yeah, I'm just loving this expansion, loving this play style of werebear in contrast to the necromancer. And yeah, I can't wait to just get further into it, because seeing where we were like in the pre-show, I was watching a little bit A Dub's action on Twitch right now. You can go check it out. Him running with his Spiritborn and seeing what a character looks like at level 152 with the Paragon boards now, running the pits and all that stuff. It's like, all right, now I see like kind of where I will be in a few years. And so yeah, it's great to just see that there's so much more of the game left, and yet I am loving just where I'm at. And this is, and I mean, you're playing with one character right now, so it's gonna be great to jump in and see what tweaks that they've done with the other classes as you jump in there, or change it up completely, go a different route. So yeah, it's like they re-released it, like it's a new game, and that's what you really wanted to capture from, was it Diablo 3 with Reaper of Souls? Like it felt like 2.0. Like it literally felt like 2.0, like the same game but on steroids. And this one, it just feels like not necessarily on steroids, but it feels like a new game from a level of customization and things to just work towards with the runes and all that stuff. Like I haven't even touched that. Like I saw a little bit of what you had going on. And so yeah, it's there's so many options that influence your level of power and your build and your strategy. And it's great to just like see the different philosophies of how people decide to, work through their builds. So there's nothing like Diablo 4. It's definitely going to be one of my games of the generation, if not my game of the generation, because I skipped Diablo 3. So I'm just that much more excited as I'm playing this one to be back in that world on a consistent basis. Yeah, they Blizzard hit it out the park with this expansion, and I'm hoping that they just continue to update this game all the way through till the next one comes out. And the good thing with Diablo is they come out few and far between, like decades in between. They skip generations to put out a Diablo game. And so knowing that this one has a battle pass, the live service nature of it, there's incentive to keep supporting it because they have these battle passes. If people keep picking it up, there was an article out like a couple weeks ago about how much they've made through microtransactions and da, 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 da on the game. But if that income keeps flowing in, then you better believe that like they're going to be told by Microsoft, Activision to keep it coming, keep engaging your audience, because they want more content there by contributing to these battle passes. Blizzard is incentivized. And so yeah, I can't wait to see how this game continues to evolve, because if we get another class, we get more content down the line, man, I can't imagine where we will be. But that's enough of that, A-Dub. Let's take a quick break and we will get into these topics of the week.
Topics of
Topics
the
of the
week.
week. All right, we are back, A-Dub. Would you lead us off with the first topic of the week?
Topic of the week. Topic of the week. Quick hit. Just want to ease you in. Get your toes wet.
Jesus.
We got some big. I mean, there's some big news. It's really big news. It's something that people have been waiting for. Perhaps fans of other franchises will hold out for hope and believe that perhaps one day a miracle can happen in the way that this one has. I'm here to report by way of IGN. Wesley Yin Poole says Red Dead Redemption finally has a PC release date 14 years after it first launched. So all you holdouts on PC, they were like, I'll play it with better graphics when it comes out on PC, play it with 60 frames on PC. Well, here's your chance. You just had to wait 14 years. For the first time in its storied legacy, John Marston's beloved journey can be experienced on PC in stunning new detail, with both Red Dead Redemption and its iconic zombie horror companion story, Undead Nightmare, arriving on PC October 29th.
Nice,
Let's
nice,
see.
nice.
PC port developed by Double 11. They've worked on ports to the PlayStation 4 and Nintendo Switch for Red Dead Redemption, so it seems like this is what they do. They add PC-specific enhancements, including native 4K resolution at up to 144 hertz on compatible hardware, monitor support for both ultra-wide, your 21 by 9, and super ultra-wide, your 32 by 9, HDR10 support, and full keyboard and mouse functionality. There's also support for NVIDIA DLSS 3.7 and AMD FSR 3.0 upscaling technologies, NVIDIA DLSS frame generation, adjustable draw distances, shadow quality settings, and more. AMC, is this enough to get you over into the PC camp? Is this the one game you're looking for to be like, consoles are a bunch of bullshit. It's time for me to upgrade my kernels and download my DLLs.
My DLLs, update my drivers. This is definitely not it. Happy for the PC community, I'm sure. I don't know what everybody says. Oh man, the mods are gonna be so good. The mods.
CJ's gonna be out there first.
Yeah, with a samurai sword. Yeah, it's cool. I'm happy for the PC community. Anytime they get something that we've been playing for years, it's something to rejoice, because they're now gonna be able to have their way with it, to ravage it and make it something new. And that's always fun. I'm always happy to see that, to see a game kind of be reborn on the PC. And this is a big one because people love Red Dead, Red Dead Redemption. Like, this is the good one, A-Dub. This is the one where you can run around everywhere. Your horse isn't an idiot.
Ride your horse through town.
you don't have to micromanage everything. You want to ride around nice and slow, look at the sunsets, but also not complain about the game being too slow. So it's everything that people loved about Red Dead Redemption is all here. They can join this game, play it as John Marston, really appreciate what this whole one had. And you got Undead Nightmare, which is considered to be the greatest deal, the greatest expansion of all time to a video game, and the greatest DLC.
Highest rated, wasn't it like a 10 out of 10?
I think 10 out of 10, yeah, exactly. I mean, I feel like Vessel of Hatred is a 10 out of 10, but just saying. Yeah. I'm happy that people also get to experience that, because Undead Nightmare, by all accounts, is just, as we said, it's something that people just talk about till this day as one of the greatest additions to a game, and it's fun. You get to see Bigfoot and the Chupacabra and all types of shit, fight zombies. So it's gonna be great. It's a good time. I can't wait for this to come out. It's just another thing. And this one, we'll see how it launches, but they had that recent port and it was controversial. And so now,
as everything tends to be.
Yeah, but this one's at least, because it's on PC and not on console, so there's not this like, oh, they're making us pay for this game all over again vibe to it. I think this one will come with a little bit more fanfare, so I'm enjoying this little bit of news. I did see this story and it put a smile on my face, A-Dub. How about you? Does this get you any closer building that power PC so you could play Red Dead Redemption with all the ray tracing and DLLs and NVIDIA card stuff going on with it?
It doesn't streaming. Get me any closer. I mean, I don't think that I'd personally purchased the game, and it's interesting to me that people waited 14 years to pay full price for a 14-year-old game. But aside from that, it's good for the people who play on PC, especially PC only people who just haven't had this game, or perhaps they emulated it and didn't really need it. But in any case, got the game, got the support. That's a win, and it doesn't get me closer to making the PC. However, as the days go by, I hope we're getting closer to those new video cards being announced so that I can finally commence the build. But anyway, AMC, let's get us into the next topic of the week. Top topic of the week.
Yes. Let's get into August NP. Well, no, actually, this is now Circana.
Circana.
Yeah, August top selling games in the U.S. for 2024. This information coming by way of your boy Matt Piscatella. He left X recently. He switched over to Threads. I think there might be like a not a growing exodus, but there are people who are taking their services over to Threads away from X because they're not. I didn't see why, but I can guess why.
There are many reasons.
Yeah. So yeah, I looked up Threads. I found him on Threads and got the info still. So yeah, let's go into it. We're gonna do the top. Well, yeah, we'll do the top 20 best-selling games of August, A-Dub. So number one, we got a new one, not a surprise. This one being Madden NFL 25. Number two, A-Dub. EA Sports College Football 25. Number three, we got another new game, A-Dub, a controversial game, A-Dub. Oh,
Jesus.
This one being Star Wars Outlaws.
There we
Lost,
go.
lost. So debuting at number three behind Madden. More on that. Number four, EA Sports MVP Bundle. If you want to know what the MVP Bundle is, it is a bundle of Madden and college football. So Madden, number one, college football, number two. At number four, a bundle of Madden and college football.
College football with a little so, Star Wars in between.
Yeah. Let's see, number five, Elden Ring, six, Hogwarts Legacy still selling, seven, Minecraft always selling, eight, Call of Duty Modern Warfare, that four, three, that's a three, I think, nine, Marvel's Spider-Man 2, and 10, got another new game, A-Dub, Visions of Mana. The other new game that came out at number 11, Gundam Breaker 4 Breaker. And then we'll just run through these last ones. Elder Scrolls Online. Oh, I thought people weren't playing multiplayer again. Helldivers 2. I thought people weren't playing. I thought they ruined this game. Mario Kart 8 still selling. Ghost of Tsushima.
Still.
Sea of Thieves still selling. MLB The Show. Forza Horizon 5. Gran Turismo 7. Oh, still selling. And EA Sports FC 24-4-4. Let's see. Madden NFL 25 was the best-selling video game of August 2024, the 25th consecutive year, A-Dub, in which a new Madden NFL franchise release was the best-selling title in its release month. This streak began with the release of Madden NFL 2001 back in August of 2000. So it's just anytime a Madden comes out, it's debuting at number one for that month. Let's see now. We also have the best-selling games year to date, A-Dub. Number one, Call of Duty. No, not Call of Duty. EA Sports College Football 25. Number two, A-Dub, Helldivers 2. Number three, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, EA Sports MVP Bundle at four. Damn. Elden Ring still selling at number five. Dragon's Dogma 2 at six. MLB The Show 24 at 7, WWE 2K24 at 8, also available right now on PS Plus if you want to just pick that up right now. 9, Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth, and 10, Hogwarts Legacy, still selling, selling, selling. And in case you're wondering, Madden NFL 25 debuted at number 12 for the year. And Star Wars did not make the top 20 as of yet. Let's see. For August, video game hardware spending dropped 36% when compared to a year ago at $208 million. All current generation console hardware platforms declined by at least 34% when compared to a year ago, with Switch showing the sharpest year-on-year decline of 41%. So a little bit of a reason why people might be time to inject some new consoles into the hardware space with the Switch 2, maybe. This is a way to get PlayStation to get their people to buy some more consoles, put out the PS4, PS5 Pro. But yeah, we're seeing declines in console sales. PlayStation 5, again, led the month's hardware market in unit and dollar sales, with Xbox Series ranking two across both measures. PS5 DualSense wireless controller in the Midnight Black, A-Dub, was the August best-selling accessory in dollar sales, while the PlayStation Portal, I thought nobody wanted this, remained as the bestseller in 2024 year-to-date as far as accessories go. And then I just happened to look up, they also provided the top games as far as monthly active users on each console. So, you know, people like to talk about how single-player, like, you know, controls the space, how single player is what all people really want. If you want to make money, make single player games, don't do live service. So let's see, the top five we'll do on PlayStation for August. The top five most played games: number one, Call of Duty; number two, Fortnite; number three, Roblox; number four, Minecraft; number five, Grand Theft Auto 5 Remastered. Let's see, on Xbox, number one, Fortnite multiplayer. Call of Duty, at number two, multiplayer. At number three, Grand Theft Auto 5 multiplayer. At number four, Roblox multiplayer. EA Sports at number five, college football multiplayer. And then they also handed out, they let us know what's going on with the most active users on Steam. At number one, we got Deadlock multiplayer. Counter-Strike 2 multiplayer. Number 3, Helldivers 2 multiplayer. Also gives a little credence to showing that the PC community is still well engaged with Helldivers 2. Number 4, Baldur's Gate 3, single player, but also can be played as multiplayer. And 5, another single player game that can be played as multiplayer, Elden Ring. So yeah, that's all we got for the best-selling games of the month. But A-Dub, there's a lot of criticism about Star Wars Outlaws. It did show up at number 3, and we see that the only games ahead of it are two football games, which, as shown, as stated by Matt Piscitella, Madden for 25 consecutive years straight has debuted at number 1. So what do you think about that? The focus on Star Wars Outlaws not being a great game, but still showing up at number 3 just behind football.
I mean, it all depends on what else followed it other than that bundle. Like, what's the first not sports game after Star Wars?
After Star Wars, let's see, it would be Elden Ring.
Damn.
Yeah, so Elden Ring, Hogwarts Legacy, and then you get to Minecraft, Call of Duty, you're back in it. And then Spider-Man 2 at number 9. So yeah, it's a lot of generational games as far as Elden Ring, Hogwarts Legacy, which is, you can't beat that brand. And then you get back into Minecraft, Call of Duty, and the usuals.
Yeah, like it, a bunch of games with long tails, it seems. I'd like to remember this lineup and then see how things shake out for September when we get the Space Marine 2 and where it falls in that month. But I mean, hey, Star Wars, it apparently didn't meet sales expectations according to Ubisoft. I think they fell short of a million sales within a certain period. And they weren't too happy about that. Although the more I go on Reddit and look around online, the more I'm seeing people who are just very happy and excited for with and for the game. So there's like I don't know. I guess word of mouth is probably going to be the biggest factor for this one, since so many people just knee-jerk their way away from it because it had Ubisoft on the box, or because it had Star Wars on the box, or because it had a woman lead, or some reason that just completely dismisses all the hard work and the exceptional level of development that went into that game. Like, yeah, it has its issues. Yeah, it's not the greatest game of all time, but that's not how you measure things. Sometimes you just look at them for what they are. And for what Star Wars Outlaws is, it's a very solid game that definitely deserves someone's time and attention if they are interested in the title. But it's doing well. It's charting. Hopefully it's still hanging around in the top 10 come the September numbers. I'm definitely looking at Space Marine to usurp at least one of the top three in that situation, at least one, as if there's more. But you know what I mean? Like, it's, I don't think it'll be the number one game, but I could definitely see it being two or three just based on the way that it was received and the way that I imagine. Well,
It better be just by the way it was received, because people talked about it like, I mean, I love Space Marine, but there's this heavy focus. So like that, yeah, from my takeaway from this is like everything leading up to August was Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars. But then ultimately, as pointed out by Matt Piscitella, 25 years straight, Madden is the best-selling game of the month. And so there's just this. From the gaming community, it's all about, the single player experience. But for the greater gaming community, they want their football. They don't give a shit about what's going on with Star Wars, yada, yada, yada. Like, they just want their football. But there's just like this focus because, single player, the style of games that, a lot of the coverage is centered around is single player. But when it comes to sales and what the general masses want, it's not games that are covered traditionally as heavily as other games like Star Wars. So it's kind of funny to just that heavy focus on this Star Wars game, but yet Madden tried and true, 25 years straight, gonna sell no matter what comes out next to
no
it that
matter what.
month. So yeah, it's always a reminder of the bubble that we're in as far as coverage versus like what the greater, gaming community really cares about.
It's kind of troubling because, like, Star Wars, it fell short of sales expectation, but was one of the most talked about games, despite, you know, the good reviews. Space Marine reviewed well, very well, seemed to be loved by everybody who got their hands on it. Lots of excitement. However, just the conversation about Space Marine abruptly ended at some point. So I don't know if that's just awareness or lack of engagement with it, or if people are just mostly happy with it and have no need to get online and argue.
Well, and that's, yeah, and that's the thing. It was funny, like, nobody had really brought up Helldivers, you know, for a while. Like, the game sold really well. There's a lot of coverage, you know, post launch at, like, the numbers of how it was doing, you know, and then there was, like, you know, a little, like, there was some, you know, some pushback with some of the decisions that were made. But, like, you know, the game just keeps trucking along, and Space Marine comes out, and I remember just hearing, like, a couple other shows kind of use it as an, uses Space Marine to point out that, like, oh, people aren't talking about Helldivers, as if, like, you know, a game that came out, what, back in February,
yeah,
should still be at the top, like, should still be one of the main topics of conversations, like, 6 months later after it launched. But it was, it was, yeah, weird to use Space Marine as, like, a Space Marine's positive reaction as a way to then shit on Helldivers. But then you look at it, and the numbers show Helldivers 2 is still the second best-selling game of the year, and still actively played on Steam, at least. Like, it's the number three most played game on Steam still, months after release. So yeah, there's this thing of, like, when people want to shit on something, they'll say, like, well, nobody's really talking about it. But people stop talking about everything about a month after it comes out, unless there's a reason to still talk about it from a controversial standpoint, or there's new content coming out. But eventually all topics of conversation die down after launch. I don't really understand why there's this thing that, like, you have to keep talking about a game, or that means that there's something wrong with it.
It's not so much to say that there's something wrong with it. It's just that when when large amounts of people really resonate with something, there's usually an ongoing discussion, or it keeps popping up in conversations where even it's not necessarily related. And it's just, I don't see anything. Like, nobody's like, well, my favorite game of the year was Space Marine, or, you know, we're talking, like, not even any of the of these side discussions, like,
no. Because now the focus is, it's funny because, as you said, it's what's controversy, and what's controversial to literally, we're still talking about Ubisoft now. And
yeah,
what, Star Wars, yeah, came out in September, and we're not even talking about Star Wars at this point. Like, Star Wars failure then has now led into focus on Ubisoft, and will they be taken private? Is Tencent gonna buy them? Like, are they gonna go under? And that's, like, that's literally the leading topic of conversation, which, yep, to your point, it's what's, it, nobody's talking about the actual game. They're talking about, like, industry shit. And that's why, yeah, it's, when people, yeah, talk, like, that's the idea of just talking about a game doesn't necessarily mean that it's doing well. It's just, there's something going on with that game that is still worth being discussed. But it's, like, doesn't necessarily mean, like, there's, it's a weird thing that it's equated to, we got to be talking about it, or the game was just a flash in the pan. It's like, no, people could have played it. And also, a lot of times around this time of the year, something else is going to come out a week later and going to, like, take over the topic of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Metaphor, ReFantazio.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then that's going to dominate the conversation for, like, a week or two.
Yeah, and then there'll be something after that. And I mean, what, we were just talking about, what, Starfield. Now we're back to Ubisoft. We'll be probably back to Starfield in a second if Todd Howard says something. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's, I almost feel like it's what drives engagement is what people talk about. And it's not necessarily, like, if a game is doing well, if there's not a lot of engagement around that topic, then there's not a lot of focus on that thing. And it's overlooked by a lot of, you know, a lot of people. I think they don't acknowledge it, that that's what drives a lot of their topics, but they know where the engagement numbers are, and they want to hit those numbers. And so, whether or not they want to openly admit it, I think that drives a lot of their focus.
We'll see, man. I hope Space Marine does well.
I mean, by all accounts, from what I saw, at least it's doing very well in Europe. And I know that Warhammer is actually a lot bigger in Europe. So we'll see how, from a US perspective, how this audience resonates with that genre.
I mean, I feel like I saw an article where Embracer Group was like, yep, we don't like either they were saying something about how they don't need to sell millions of copies for their games to be successful, or their game is doing fine and it doesn't need to sell millions of copies to be successful. But that's an excellent sign. So yeah,
That's
man,
good, yeah.
just hoping for more, you know. Just, people loved it. Grimes playing it, my brother has interest in it, you have it, you're enjoying it.
It's a
So
game that only had what, like a 12-hour campaign. And maybe that is also another part of it, is like it was a pretty short, for the most part. I haven't beaten it yet, but it's considered a short campaign, 12 hours. And then you kind of get into the multiplayer aspect of it. And so I think there was a lot of like, oh, this is great. And I almost felt like a lot of the discussion around Space Marine 2 was, it's a throwback. It feels like a throwback. It reminds me of like great games on the 360. Yeah, it was a lot of that, and the comparisons to what was it? It was Simon Phoenix.
Gears.
That's not with it. Gears of War.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of compares with it. Simon Phoenix is from Demolition Man. But
Yes.
yeah, Gears of War. There's a lot of comparisons with that. And so I think there wasn't really a lot more to the game beyond that. Like it was a fun game. It was in contrast to like what we had seen, I think also with Star Wars, as far as like male protagonists, got a white dude as the protagonist. There's not a lot, there's no
It's
pop.
a throwback.
Exactly. And they're like just a bunch of buff white dudes. There's not a lot of story to the game. So that means there's no politics or anything. There wasn't a lot of toxic positivity around this game.
It's the most political game you could possibly imagine, except you're the space assholes. Like everyone's space assholes, but you're like the racist, bigoted in space assholes.
But they don't get into relationships, or there's no same sex. And that's the funny thing, is because they're Astartes. They're literally genetically they're genetically enhanced people from the
Genetically
Emperor's, like,
superior.
yeah, from the Emperor's genes, yada yada yada. And so yeah, they're gonna be a certain type of dude. There's I think I ran into one woman in the game, and she's like a female officer who kind of just guides you on your next mission. And so yeah, this is this is the game that gamers love,
Whatever helps single player games with no, does it have microtransactions? Who cares? It has a good campaign.
It has a
That's all that
roadmap.
matters. That's all that matters. So yeah, let's get more of it. Like if Embracer can take a storied franchise like Space Marine and turn it and modernize it and make it successful, then clearly they've got some people somewhere in there that know what they're doing. And let's give them another project. Let's give them more stuff to bring to the market. So, yeah.
Like I felt like when like the UFC showed up, there was definitely like a group of people that are like, finally, finally a place where I can go and be me in a way. And so yeah, it's like there was a sorry, I was just thinking about a UFC event, and fighter one, and it was a female fighter. She was giving a speech about like breast cancer awareness, and like the UFC audience was just booing. And I was like, yeah, it's like that's the UFC audience in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like there are these people who just they want their man, my man game, and so they got that with Space Marine, and it's a great game. It's just you see where the allegiances are as far as what people want, like a certain segment of people want in video games. But yeah, that's enough of this topic. Let's get into the next topic, A Dub. All right, we are back. Had some technical difficulties. A Dub, sorry about that. My headphone was bugging. Can you please lead us off with the next topic of the week?
Topic of the week. Podcasting ain't easy, y'all, but something that makes it a little easier, a little smoother for my taste. We got some more news from IGN saying Halo Infinite is officially getting a third person mode, and not off in some far-flung future. No, you see, this third person mode is coming this November, November, November. See, in some major and pretty surprising news for Halo fans, Halo Infinite is finally getting a third person mode. 343 Industries, soon to be, if not already, Halo Studios, announced the news on Friday during a Forge panel at the 2024 World Championship for Halo. For those who aren't at the event, the announcement was also posted on X/Twitter, including a bit of work in progress footage of third person mode in action. As fans will know, this marks the first time a third person mode has ever been officially offered in a Halo game. Senior community manager John J and Skybox Labs senior software engineer Colin Cove offered a bit more information at the Halo World Championship panel, saying they'll be starting with third-person firefight mode in a future update, but will also have the ability to do in PvP and control it in Forge, per Cove. They clarified the third-person will be supported at the mode level, and that with Forge controls, modes can switch individual players or all players between third and first person perspectives whenever desired. It's currently unclear if it will be available in campaign mode or restricted to multiplayer. AMC, the PC is looking more enticing. The Series S looking more enticing. Is this it? Is this the final straw that gets you over on the other side of the fence?
No, but I am loving it. I remember when they first debuted Halo Infinite, and you saw the Master Chief from a distance in the third, not in the third person, I guess it was a third person view, but not necessarily a third person mode, but you see them riding in the open plane from a distance. And that was kind of like, I remember that was the first time people were like, man, it'd be kind of hot to see the Master Chief like in this game. Are we going to get that? And we didn't. Until now, a dub. Yes, yeah, yes. It's great. I'm glad that they've been working on this to make a thing. I think it's gonna get people excited for Halo again, because I mean, what? How could you not? Like, everybody wants to see the Master Chief. They want to see his face, but everybody wants to see the Master Chief. And so, yeah, to be able to have that view, to really get to see that action, I think every game benefits from having third person as an option at least. Because, you know, there are those people who love that, to love to see, you know, that work put into their character, or just to see that action coming from their character. So I think it's a good way to inject some life into that franchise, to give it, you know, a new feel, a unique feel, something different, something, you know, something that much needed, much wanted from a lot of people. How about yourself, A-Dub? Are you jumping back into the Halo sphere?
You know, if they can get that third person going on the campaign, I think I'll buy myself some Halo Infinite. But we'll have to see what happens, because, you know, I put money in this kind of stuff, dude. If you got that third person, if you have a way for me to see my character, then I'm going to be more inclined to spend money on the things that I can look at on my character. So, you know, there's a revenue boosting opportunity there. Other than that, I always imagine most first person games, or all first person games, like, damn, this would be better in third person. So if Halo is making that jump, one of the slowly growing list of games to offer both first and third person perspectives, then I welcome it with open arms. Like I said, if they get that going on the campaign, we'll assuredly have a copy of Halo Infinite. So I'm excited to see what this looks like. I'm excited to hear how it plays, because like it's not enough to just pull the camera back and put a body out there. The animation's gotta be right. And the one thing that would kill this for me, and maybe other people, but just speaking for myself, the one thing that would kill this for me is if they go in that third person mode and it's tank body. That mech body where the legs go one way, but the torso stays straight, and you just switching the legs the direction as often as you get. Oh man, if they don't put in the time and the consideration to make the third person look like it belongs in that universe, then this will fall flat. But if they get that right, then that could be that could be the deciding factor for whether or not this is or is good for the game. So that's just how I feel, though. We got some other people.
Yeah.
We got some other opinions about the franchise. They hear the Halo news, and then they sing the Halo blues. We got Troll of the Week. Troll of the Week. First troll says, stop supporting these clowns. Damn. Next troll says, so now you can play the worst Halo in the franchise in third person? Cool. Next troll says, probably in anticipation of the PS5 release, their tummies can't handle the first person. And oddly enough, after reading that, there was another post further down that wasn't even a response to this. So they were like, yeah, this is pretty cool. Like, my friend can't play first person games because he gets motion sickness. I was like, damn, he's just going to make that one a reality. Last troll says, Halo is officially dead. Oh, man. So I disagree on all accounts. I mean, granted, I haven't played it yet, so I don't know if it's the worst Halo. We'll just keep the judgment to a minimum here. But for all the other stuff, I can just say everybody needs to settle down. Halo's doing fine. And fine, I guess, is fine. So hopefully this is one of the moves that turns things around for the game, or turns things up. But we also know that 343 is becoming Halo Studios. They will be doing nothing but Halo for the rest of their goddamn lives.
What are you doing, Matt Booty?
And they're also switching over to Unreal 5. And they've released some images of what Halo is going to look like on Unreal 5. And I got to tell you, it's looking pretty nice. So that switch is also going to just enable other things internally with the company that might be beneficial to the development of the next Halo. I mean, just being a more industry standard game engine, you're going to have a wider pool of talent that you can draw from that have all been trained on that engine. You know, you're going to have the Epic support. So if you have an issue or something that you can't figure out, something that you needed to do, you have people you can call that are there specifically to help and support with those kind of requests. And then I just feel like I don't know if it'll make a better game, but I feel like switching to that engine will give them the more space to make the best Halo game that they can, you know, for those reasons I mentioned before. So, AMC, you got any words for these trolls?
Nah, I got nothing to say other than this. There was a report that Halo was actually selling well. I believe it said that Halo had been profitable. Halo Infinite had been profitable for a while.
Look at that.
So all the people saying, oh, there's not a lot going on with Halo. I don't hear people talking about it. The people who are playing it are enjoying it, not out here complaining. They're happy that Halo is now in a good place, and they're just enjoying playing the game. It might not be the most played game on Xbox, but clearly it shows that there is reason to pump more resources into the game. They could have let go of it a while ago. And it also shows that they believe with something going on with 343 in order to make them the Halo studio, like literally. And so, yeah, I'm sure they'll be doing everything to back them up and one of those being moving to Unreal Engine. They feel that that might put them give them a better foundation for the next Halo game. It seems to be all positive. Like, they're moving forward with Halo. It's not as much in this influx situation where people are like, well, what's going on with Halo Infinite? Because the last thing what we heard was like, they weren't going to put any more single player content out with the game. So people thought it was like basically at this point just dead outside of battle passes, but it does show that they're still working on it, and so that's a good sign, so that people can look forward to at least getting some type of updates to it until the next Halo game comes out. And when that comes out, I mean, if it comes out right away with third person and all this other stuff, man, it's going to be insane. So that's a good sign.
Yes.
I have enough time for one more story, A-Dub. Do you want to take it, or I have one lined up? How do you feel? Do you have any really good ones?
Well, everybody deserves to have a little extra AMC in the class.
All right, A-Dub, this one by PC Gamer. This will be a something that we can discuss after. AI in games might have just proven itself useful for change. Activision
Oh.
claims Call of Duty's seen a 43% drop in disruptive voice chat since the start of the year, thanks to its Robo Snitch. So let's see.
Is that what it's called?
Nah, that's what the PC Gamer,
Oh,
like the person
okay.
who wrote the article, said.
Yeah.
It's actually called ToxMod. So yeah, since rolling out an improved voice chat enforcement in June 2024, Call of Duty has seen a combined 67% reduction in repeat offenders of voice chat-based offenses in Modern Warfare 3 and Call of Duty Warzone. In July 2024, 80% of players that were issued a voice chat enforcement since launch did not reoffend.
Ooh,
Exposure to
that
disruptive voice
recidivism
chat.
going down.
Yeah, exposure to voice chat. Exposure to disruptive voice chat continues to fall, dropping by 43% since June 2024. Oh, sounds like it's getting a little toxic positive over there, A-Dub. Let's see. The AI software in question is ToxMod, which Activision announced it'd be including in Call of Duty August of last year. This software essentially acts as a goody two-shoes narc that's always watching your games. It's not responsible for banning anybody, but it will listen and report for flaming for your flaming for moderation. Hopefully, by a team of people able to make up the act. So, in essence, it's listening and then it records it and it sends it to a moderator, who then reviews the audio and decides if somebody should be banned. But there, it's actually pretty detailed how this thing monitors. Let's get into that, A-Dub. What's more, ToxMod is able to listen to the tone of your voice, allowing it to separate banter and genuine hate.
Interesting.
It has a severity rating system too. For example, certain slurs have been reclaimed by their community. We're taking it back, A-Dub. And
So
so when it
black can black players say the N-word and non-black players can't?
apparently so, A-Dub. So
That'd
when it
be crazy.
detects a slur, it claims to keep an eye on the immediate reactions of other people present. For example, if someone says the N-word and clearly offends others in the chat, that will be rated much more severely than what appears to be reclaimed usage that is incorporated naturally into conversation. So it'd be
That's
like
crazy.
my N-words, and if nobody's upset, so it can be a bunch of white dudes using the N-word. I think it'll be okay, right? Like, as long as they're not offended by it.
As long as
Yeah.
nobody's offended. So it'll be interesting to see, like, basically there's a card distribution that we're not being told about.
It also said there's some other common sense stuff too. For example, if there's a young sounding person in the chat, offenses will be rated higher. Us grown adults can probably handle some bad words, but I think we can all agree that teaching little Timmy how to insult my sexuality with his whole chest probably isn't great for society as a whole. So that's an entire article. They did get into the possibility of privacy concerns because it's constantly listening and recording your dialogue. At least when it feels like it needs to record it, but it is constantly listening. So there's I guess, a big brother thing. But I don't know, A-Dub, how do you feel? Do you feel that if this thing is meant to, regulate the discourse and be able to, I guess, choose between what's considered like offensive language versus more conversational, do you see this as a good thing or do you see this as a little too intrusive? How do you feel about all that? Using AI to help regulate the community's conversation and discourse.
I mean, had you asked me this 4 or 5 years ago, I'd probably have a more conservative answer. But honestly, I kind of welcome this and tools like it because it's getting out of control. The platforms just simply can't keep up with all the toxicity online, all the name calling, slur throwing, and just people going out of their way to be as as nasty as they can to each other. And that's not just in video games. I mean, that's just online in general. And it needs to stop. Like, there needs to be some kind of overhaul or change to parameters, discipline, and systems like this, where like people are just running rampant. Then there are other people who are like, yeah, whatever, it's just a game. And then there are other people who are actually, you know, getting hurt by this stuff, probably don't even want a game anymore because the environments are just so hostile. And, you know, it's interesting when people really want something and they use unspoken groups as a kind of like a human shield to get their point across. And then when they don't like something, then they also use that. You know what I mean? It's just, man, it needs to change. This is a step in the right direction for that change. And as long as it can produce the desired result while keeping outliers to a minimum and, you know, not creating more tension or just being too heavy-handed, then I think it'll be a useful tool. Because, you know, if people are getting got by the system and coming back and behaving themselves, then that system seems to be producing at least somewhat the desired result. You know, it's not like they're putting you in prison. So yeah, they're not taking your people. Lives. Yeah, they're not like handicapping your life. It's just a video game. So, you know, if you can't learn how to play a video game without being a toxic asshole, then maybe you shouldn't be playing that game. And if you're coming back, if you can get your act together, then good. There's hope for you.
Yeah, one of the things I heard in the new Call of Duty, they have that meat shield thing where you can grab somebody from behind. You can whisper in their ear. And so I'm sure this is where it's good because, you know, it's intended to, like, you can talk shit to somebody and they can respond. And I think they want you to... So I think it's like they want you to be able to, you know, have fun in that sense. But, you know, you know where the line is, and they want to make sure that line is clearly defined. And so they're not anti-teabagging and all that stuff and trolling, but they are when it comes to, you know, offensive shit. And so I think that is a good defining line to have. It's like, yeah, let people like have fun and like kind of get under each other's skins, but you know, you don't have to take it there. And that's I think that's where we want it to be when it comes to like gaming in that way.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, that's all I got. A dub, you have any final words before we get out of here?
Yeah, if you think things are getting thick now, just wait until the end of October and on through the rest of the year, because this 2024 still has some heavy hitters coming, and I have high hopes. I hope you do too. Have a good one.
This is good.
This is a good. We are controlling. Control issues!